Hi everyone, my name is Patrick Akiel, and this episode really made me think. The way you present yourself, the confidence you exude, and the relationships you have really impact the value you bring to the table, and understanding what that value is allows you to take hold of those factors and influence them. Helping me understand all of that and more is my friend Francesca Diaz. She has an electrifying amount of energy, which is addicting, and I'm sure you'll like this episode. Enjoy! What is like your day-to-day like nowadays?
Okay, it really transitions. There are days where I'm behind the scenes cooking creative stuff for my clients. Or there are days where I'm having client after client of one-to-one calls. And then there are weeks where I have to be on stage several times a week. So it really depends on the season. So you can imagine during summer, it's more one-to-one work. Actually, now it's more being on stage, being working with groups, with clients, corporate clients. It's really exciting.
Nice. And what is like your favorite thing? Because I can imagine one-on-one conversations have a very different dynamic from standing on stage and presenting material there.
Ooh, I love that question. I actually like them all. They are, of course, different in their own way, as you said. But there's something magical that happens when I'm on stage. I think I was designed since I'm a young kid to be on stage and to work with big groups of people. It's insane. I usually say that I feel like I'm a little bit beyond myself. And I give absolutely everything from myself to the people. So I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
On the other side, I absolutely also love to be one-to-one with a client and see them flourish and see them come to realizations that they never thought before. So they all have their own special secret sauce.
I see that. I think I align with that as well. For me, though, doing conferences and standing on stage, even conversations like this, if I were to have my previous self, like from 15 years ago, they would be like, what the hell are you doing? Like this could never be me, basically.
Yeah.
But you already said from early on, from a young age, this was always you.
Yeah, it's very weird. I was afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to do a lot of work to pass through that fear.
Yeah.
But if I look back enough, I see it always there.
Okay.
The excitement and the will, and especially the intention to teach and share what excites me and what I know can make a difference. I think the bug was always there since I'm a very young kid.
And I mean, I've told you this before, even in pre-conversations, like the way you speak, it's so eloquent. Was this also always there? Because, I mean, English is a secondary language for both you and me. So it would have to take some practice, no? How'd you get really good at this?
Yeah, doing it a lot, I think. Yeah. Also, in my corporate career, I used to guide groups and do lots of workshops with people. And as a consequence of being a leader amongst people, I had to talk a lot and guide people a lot.
Yeah.
I think that helped. But I think I can tell you a small story from my childhood that already shows how much practice I was getting when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
When I was 6 years old, my favorite play was to arrive at home. I have twin brothers, brother and sister. They are twins amongst themselves. 3.5 years younger than me. So you can imagine, I'm six and they are three something.
Exactly. You're in control.
Yeah. Oh my God. Poor children. But I arrived at home and my favorite play was to sit them around and just teach them everything I learned at school.
Yeah.
And my parents thought I was actually playing until the day when my young brother is sitting at the breakfast table with a cereal box, and he starts reading the labels.
Yeah.
And they realize she's not playing. She's actually teaching them. So that was the amount of excitement that I got from it. So it started young.
Yeah. That's funny because from my point of view, when I see people teaching, I always consider that not everyone does that, right? And it's very special to have that from an early on kind of age. I think it makes sense because if you have siblings, you're like, oh, do this. Like, this is what I learned. It's like the people you interact with the most.
Exactly.
Family and then friends, of course. So it's really funny to hear that from a young age was always there.
Yeah. And a very good practice as well. And I start realizing that more and more the older I get is that they were a very tough crowd. They were 3.5 years old.
Yeah.
So I had to practice how to keep them engaged, how to keep them. I didn't want to put them there at first. I wanted them to love that as much as I did. And I think that gave me practice on reading the room, understanding how to bring excitement to people around what I believe is important.
Yeah.
So I think the practice also started there.
Do you still do that? Like, do you still have those same interactions with your siblings?
Oh, now it's different. It's more equal. I learn from them as much as they learn from me.
That's good.
And I'm very glad that we evolved in that way as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Do you have siblings, by the
way? I do. Yeah, I have three.
Three?
Yeah.
So you guys are four.
We're four.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. But there's quite an age difference. Like, my oldest younger brother, let's say, is 7 years of difference.
Okay.
Then my sister is 10 years of difference with me. And then the youngest brother is 16 years of difference.
Oh, so it's quite a difference.
It's quite a difference. Oh, okay. Yeah. Like he's going to high school now and he's going to the same high school as me. And I'm like, who's still there teaching? And yeah. some teachers still are there, which is quite funny to see. Yeah.
And some of them knew the older brother, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Even my mom went to that same school. It's from the same little city. They always stayed there. And I recently, like 3-4 years ago, moved to Amsterdam. But other than that, I always stayed in the same city. We moved around a lot, like 4 or 5 times.
Okay.
But always within the same city.
Oh, cool. So you kept your friends, you kept the school.
Yeah.
Oh,
very when I went cool. to high school, it was weird because I had been to probably 3 or 4 primary schools. And then from there, people would remember me, or I would recognize people. Or there was one person which I completely did not recognize. And then you knew my name. And I'm like, who is this guy? Like, it didn't make sense to me.
Because you interacted with so many people.
Yeah.
Wow.
But then they also had a growth spurt. Like, they looked like an adult to me, and I was 12.
There's no way you would recognize them as well, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I guess that gave you a lot of practice with people.
Maybe. I still am very bad at keeping up with my network. That's probably like why I didn't recognize people. But yeah, it was a funny high school experience just because of that. Yeah.
Okay.
And then moving into uni was completely different. Then you meet new people from different cities and you're like, oh, this is actually, it's quite big.
Yeah, exactly.
Like this little world out there.
Wow.
Yeah. But cool. I saw, and also in a conversation we had before, that you started out as an aerospace engineer, mechanical engineer, which is completely different than the thing you're doing now. Can you kind of start with that in mind and then lead up to what you're doing now?
Oh, cool. I can start from the beginning.
Yeah.
Indeed, I have a master in aerospace engineering. Very, very nerdy background.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was. It really was. And it was those courses where you have like 500 people and 3 girls in the full audience. So,
yeah.
But indeed, very, very nerdy. I finished my studies back in Portugal, so I'm originally Portuguese.
Yeah.
And I got this amazing, exciting opportunity to come to the Netherlands and work in the high-tech campus, the Silicon Valley of Europe, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow. And so back then, I leave my family behind, and I also, my boyfriend today, my husband. Mm. And I say, okay, I'm going to make this work. I arrive at the office super excited, building technology to the world. Wow. And I look around and I say, oh my God, what have I done?
Mm.
Everyone was 20, 30 years older than me.
Yeah.
And I was by far the only woman of the department.
Yeah.
So I go, okay, I'm a little bit out of place, but I'm used to this. I'm going to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And I do lots of leadership training, stakeholder management, you name it. I did it back then.
Yeah.
And it started bearing fruit. I was already leading from a very, very young age, small groups of engineers, much older than me, and building technology that actually inspired me and excited me.
That's good.
Indeed, I was so happy about that. But there was something that I didn't know how to fix, and I kept on bumping into it. I can give you a few examples. I remember being in a meeting room with my colleagues and other stakeholders and giving my opinion, and nobody hears it.
Mm.
And then my colleague next to me says exactly the same thing, word by word. And everyone says, yes, let's do that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what just happened?
That's a sad truth. Yeah.
Yeah. And what it just kept on happening until the point when I do this amazing presentation. So I thought.
Mm-hmm.
It had a lot of value for the full department. So I thought, okay, this is going to be deployed. It's going to have impact. I do the presentation and nothing. Crickets. Mm-hmm. So what's happening?
Yeah.
So I asked help, feedback behind the closed door from the only one other woman of the area where I was working. She was already quite a senior in the company. And I just, behind closed doors, hey, can you tell me what happened?
What's going on?
Yeah, what just happened? You saw the presentation, right?
Yeah.
She just looks at me disappointed and says, Francisca, you just look like a girl. What?
Okay.
You look like a girl?
Yeah.
I didn't react like that. I think her phone came back and then I went home to vent. What? I look like a girl? I just brought amazing value to the company, right?
Yeah.
I just did all of this work. I presented it. My colleagues are out there in flip-flops and jeans.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the one who looks like a girl. Why does that matter?
Yeah.
But if I was honest with myself, I went to the mirror, took a little bit of courage, and objectively looked at myself, she was right.
But in what way did she mean that?
If I would look at myself in the mirror, I still looked like a student coming out of university.
Okay.
I was not showing up in my body language, in the way I dressed, in the way I spoke, like the power woman version of myself that I had been creating and developing in my brain, right? With all of those capabilities and already leading people. I was showing up unsure. And that energy was being perceived and received by everyone else. They were receiving that energy. So I said to myself, okay, I have something to do here. Either I'm stubborn and I keep on bumping into the same wall until I have to give up because this is annoying, way too annoying and painful. Or I choose to do something about it. I choose to embody what that version of power woman that is brewing inside of my head means when I interact with people, when I move, when I dress.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to become a Darth Vader version of a businesswoman. And I think you know that, right?
Full on suit.
Yeah, exactly. It was not my character. I wanted to stay authentic. So I did. The moment I did that, my full reality shifted. I got promoted twice in a row, started leading the international teams, presenting programs for the full company, which is a wide world company. The best, the people that were challenging me before, now we're coming for me to advise. And I'm like, what just happened? It looks like I just took the red pill from Matrix. So I said to myself, okay, I need to start doing the same for other women.
Yeah.
And women, because I'm a woman and it's very close to my heart. It had been my own experience, right? And I start doing, they start getting great results. I get a certification. And then to the point that I say, this is my life's work.
Yeah.
I really want people to feel the way I feel, authentic, right? In their skin, getting to where they want to get while feeling amazing. That's
I love that. Yeah. Can you kind of deep dive into what changes you made? Because that's still kind of unclear for me. You said at some point, like people were against you or they weren't really hearing the value that you were bringing, presenting, or just by virtue of not hearing your opinion and having the same opinion be heard from a different person. But then something shifted.
Yes. And I didn't recognize how big the shift was until I could look back and really see the results of it and how I was feeling.
Yeah.
I can give you two very clear examples. Before the shift, I would wake up in the morning and I would get dressed and look at myself in the mirror without even recognizing it. I recognized that afterwards, right?
Okay.
Looking at myself and say, am I worthy of being there? They are much older than me. Do I have what it takes to be there?
Yeah.
And the way I was dressing myself also showed that. I was keeping myself small. And I wasn't being authentic. I wasn't showing my personality. I didn't even know what my personal brand stood for, right? Afterwards, what I did was understanding what my secret sauce is. When I enter a room, how do I shift it, right? Yeah. We are all different. We all have different secret sauces. And if we don't own it, we cannot use it as our own superpower. So I just discover that. And then I learned to embody it. How do I translate that in the way I dress, right? How do I dress as my own version of authority that makes me feel amazing in the morning, like I'm ready and worthy and I'm going to make it, right? And how do I enter a room always confident in myself without having to second guess if I'm worthy or not to be in that room? So we are talking about mindset. We are talking about the way I dress and setting up everything at home so it's easy in the morning. And also, how do I move? And how does that help me stay authentic and in my power?
Yeah, it's strange for me also looking back that the way others perceive you, like your image, what you have on you, like the way they perceive you completely exudes a lot in what they see, the way you present or the information that is there. Right? It shouldn't be there, I think, objectively. But the fact that it is there is kind of, you have to accommodate for it. And I don't like the fact that you have to accommodate for it. I look back and like I would show up to assignments and I always traveled with public transport. And then from
Me too, by the way.
Yeah, like completely. And people would be like, why don't you have a car? Why don't you have a license? And the only reason I got a license was so I could tell people I have a license. I just don't like driving. So it's not an excuse.
Public transport.
Exactly. Yeah, you now know, I have the option.
It's my choice.
Yeah. And even then, like I would have a skateboard and I would skate from my stop and then 10 minutes to where my office would be.
How cool is that, by the way?
But yeah, I never looked back and said, oh, this does matter in the way how people perceive me. Because, I just came out of college. It makes sense that I'm young, makes sense to still have a skateboard. But if I do that now, people might look at me weird, or it might take away from the information and the value I bring.
You felt that. Did you have experiences where you've clearly recognized that was happening?
Not really. But at some point, I did get remarks like it's odd that still I do that. And I'm like, why is that? I don't understand it.
Yes.
I do perceive that.
Oh, I love your examples. Because that was a big part of my experience as well, was understanding, hey, wait a minute. There's bias in here, mm-hmm. right? What can I do? I can either fight it and just keep on resisting it, or I can find out how can bias play in my favor while I'm staying authentic. So I can still, it's not my case, but I can go on my skating board to the office and still show up as my power version. What does that mean? What other buttons can I tweak to show off that my personal brand is authentic, yet an authority in this environment? And that's possible. That's something that it's possible to do.
Yeah. But now that you've been helping people more so even on a full-time basis, what do you usually talk to them about, or what do you usually change? Is there any like silver thread amongst the people that you've helped that usually you work on?
Oh, I love that question. So I have, I created in the meantime, a program that helps, in this case, usually I mostly work with women on the one-to-one. With corporate, I work with everyone. Usually I have a mix of men and women. I absolutely love it. But I'll give you an example of the one-to-one programs. What I do is I work together with the other woman to help her bring out and come to the realization of what her secret sauce is. So basically, her personal brand, natural, something that she naturally does when she enters a room without having to make any extra effort. When she's feeling good, we all have that secret sauce.
Okay.
Right? So we find out what that secret sauce is and how does it bring a lot of value to the environment where she is. Then what we do is we unearth her personal style and how, so the personal style that aligns not only with her secret sauce, which is something behavioral, and it's something rational as well, right? But also with the natural beauty of one's body and complexion.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, I saw that in myself, but I also see that in a lot of my clients, a lot of energy being wasted and not accepting the natural beauty and the natural features that we are, that we have, and fighting against it. And that only detracts from our confidence. So I help a woman find and embrace and celebrate her own natural beauty with a specific bespoke personal style that brings everything together and helps her get where she wants to go.
Yeah. For me, the hardest challenge, I think, because that's also sometimes what I have struggled with myself, is how do you figure out what someone's secret sauce is, what they bring to the table, right? Because looking at myself and my past experience, now I think it's partly to the way I communicate things or the way I can make simple, more complex topics. But I would have to practice that. I have to have a certain amount of experience before I could say, okay, this is what I'm good at. And still then, maybe a little bit of imposter syndrome. Am I really good at that compared to other people? Like, that is still in there.
We all feel that, by the way. It's just a matter of feeding the other voice. Mm. Yeah, I'm doing it. And I'm doing it since I'm a kid, only I didn't realize I was doing it, right?
Yeah, exactly. But then how do you help people, just from those conversations, figure out what the secret sauce is? Because I feel like that needs a lot of depth.
Oh, I love it. Okay. It's several folds, but I'll highlight a few of it, the important items. Is number one, awareness. Having a look at your day-to-day interactions and really doing, usually journaling really helps when you write down things, things get a little bit more clarity.
Yeah.
Understanding, okay, I had these interactions today. How did I shift the energy of the room, especially when I was at ease, because that's when magic happens, right? How did I shift the energy of this person? What did I contribute with, right? And really start keeping awareness around those.
Yeah.
Something that is precious is also to have a look at our past. Although most of the times we try not to and we look at ourselves, I could have done this better or whatever. Really just look at it from a non-biased perspective and say, okay, as I was telling you, if I look back, I was already teaching since I was a very young girl, right? I already enjoyed spending time with people and teaching them and be around groups, right? So what is that for you? Mm. What were you when you were at your freest, happy kid? You know that feeling when you're a kid in Christmas, really excited. If you look at those moments, where were you, what were you doing? That's there's already a hint of your secret sauce in there.
Yeah.
And then we bring everything together with some embodiment exercises, because if you stay in your head, I love what you said, my imposter syndrome will pop in.
Yeah.
So it will say, ah, really? Am I really that good at it, right? So I have some embodiment exercises that I do together with my clients that allows them to shift from possibility and rationality and precision mindset to a more expanded possibility mindset. And it's all about movement. I'm talking to them while we are moving. It activates different parts of the brain. And it's beautiful that the fears are get down, the shields go down for a while because we are having fun together, moving and talking. And all of those items that come from their secret sauce come outside. And they speak it themselves. They say, okay, I love this. And I shift the room in this way.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And it's a very natural nourishing process.
I like that a lot. I'm thinking it would be valuable probably to everyone, right? Regardless if you're male or female. But the thing is, probably within this tech space, and I mean, that also comes back to what you said, you were not just very early on in age, but also you were one of the few women, right? One of the two, basically. And then for you to get feedback to the only other woman that was there, like that was the only option, basically. And it has a lot to do with the space that we're in, which I think is a shame. But I do think being at, like, understanding what your value is, your secret sauce, as well as kind of embodying what you think is powerful, because that is also where comfort is, I think is valuable to everyone. Because then everyone can be kind of their best self in what they're doing.
I love it. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And that's why, although one-to-one I tend to work with women, I absolutely love when I have mixed groups in the corporate realm, because I recognize what you're saying. We all, independently of gender, we all benefit from knowing and anchoring down our own self-worth and our value. That's, I would say, one of the most important things in our lives.
Yeah. I'm wondering why it is that just when we go into kind of this corporate space, and the corporate world for me is always, it's interesting, right? An organization is just an amalgamation of people and they come together with a certain goal. And then processes are around that to streamline the process. And sometimes people don't really know what their role is in kind of as a cog in this machine. Yeah. Yet that's where it comes out, right? How can you be authentically yourself? And that's also what people find challenging, probably because they come into an organization, things are already in place, there's a culture. So it's easier to kind of uphold their culture and their way of working, instead of being like, no, these are my values, this is what I stand for, and this is what I bring. I think a lot of people need help with that, but I don't know why that is. It's maybe like just the way we organize ourselves in organizations or what is perceived from the outside.
That's a very good question. I think human beings always have a tendency to, we are social creatures, right? Mm-hmm. So there's always a tendency to, within the group, compromise, right?
Yeah.
And I think that compromise becomes bigger and bigger the least awareness and the least self-knowledge you have, right? Because if you do already own that secret sauce for yourself, and if you have daily practices that help you continue reminding yourself of that, then even if you have a company, of course, as you were saying, with its own culture and with its own structure and, let's say, methods, etc., you can always stay true to yourself as long as within the freedom of the role, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's a way of doing things and that's your way.
Yeah.
It will always be your way. Of course, in some cases, the culture of the company might be so far away from your personal values that you realize you need to make a different choice. That's also something that can happen. But I think it's also due to a lack of awareness. I think we don't spend enough time being aware of what we are doing, with whom we are doing, and how we are doing. So really thinking about our days,
consciously.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was thinking about kind of the education space, because I think you do have that kind of as a kid. It's funny that one of the exercises you have when it comes to the secret sauce is thinking back to what you did when you were a child. And then somehow through your educational journey, you get a lot of like theory about how the world works, about how math works, linguistics, stuff like that, history as well, science, physics, all of that. I'm going to name all of them.
Exactly.
And then somehow I think you lose kind of maybe what your magic is, or you conform to your organization, whether that's in school and then at some point in an organization. Funny enough, when you have your own startup, still you have probably this mindset of this is how it's supposed to go. So you lose it somewhere.
Oh, very, very good. Yeah. If I look, I cannot say for every education system, right? But if I look at my own journey of education, it was less about supporting me to discover myself and more about giving me the knowledge, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the part where we need to discover and become aware of ourselves. It's, at least in my case, it was completely ignored.
Yeah, it's not there.
Right? It's inexistent.
Yeah, yeah.
So unless you are surrounded by people that are actively supporting you, ask those questions and help you become aware, it's not never going to happen until you potentially bump into a wall, as I was bumping, right? And you realize, something is wrong here. I don't understand this friction. Let's do something about it.
Yeah.
And then trying to understand it.
Yeah. I'm hoping with things like AI, that personal education, personalized education is going to become more prevalent. And then it can be more so because of, by virtue of being personalized, it doesn't have to be streamlined and conforming just education in general with a bigger group, which I think also lends itself towards more one-on-one education. Who are you and what are you most comfortable at? Where can you still grow? And growth is by virtue in an uncomfortable space, but also attention to how do you feel and are you at your right place or what even are your values and when would you feel right at your place?
Yeah, just like a plant. I love what you're saying. Where do you feel good, right? Mm-hmm. Does it align with your values? Let's imagine we are all plants.
Okay.
Right? You know, for a while. I could be a cactus or I could be or orchids, right?
Yeah.
We all need different things. And we are thought that, no, maybe we need it all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start feeling friction and our leaves don't look so alive, or maybe our flowers are not opening up, and then we think, okay, why is that happening? Maybe we are not giving ourselves the kind of nourishment that we need, and we are just giving ourselves the nourishment that we were thought everyone else needs.
Yeah.
But we are not cactus or cacti and orchids. We are roses and, I don't know, daisies, whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I thought, where are you going with this plant analogy? Yeah,
it's going very good.
But if everyone gets the same sunlight, everyone gets the same water, then depending on the type of plant you are, you flourish or you do not, because you require more of one or the other.
Yeah, or the soil, right?
What kind exactly.
of soil and the amount.
Yeah.
And only you can decide that and then take responsibility for that. But I don't think we are thought to do that.
No.
Yeah. Something they were saying, I want to jump into that because I find it very interesting. You were talking about personalized education,
mm-hmm.
more and more one-to-one. That puzzles me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because if I look back, and me particularly, the most self-aware or the strongest learnings that I got in my personal journey were actually in the interaction with others.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's the interaction with others conscious, right? Coming back home and thinking, what just happened? Let's journal a little bit about it.
Yeah.
Let's journal a little bit about it and let's try to understand what happened.
Yeah.
So if I imagine myself being taught without the school system where I'm interacting with my colleagues and with teachers, I think a lot of that value would have been lost.
That's true.
Right? If I didn't have my brothers, I wouldn't have practiced something that makes me feel alive, right? Which is guiding a group and teaching them.
Yeah.
If I would be being taught only by a computer, I wouldn't have had that interaction. So I don't have an answer, but I wanted to make a comment on that because I'm afraid that for me, that wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you mentioned it before as well. Humans are social animals, basically. Without the social component, things would be missing. But yet I do, like, if I take my personal journey as kind of an experience, I would be done with math, for example, and I would struggle with linguistics. So, and I didn't like reading. So struggling with linguistics while not liking to read, that's hard. That's a hard combination.
Yeah, of course.
But with math, I would be done. And then I would have to read a book kind of, against my liking. And I would,
like
I would still finish it.
Yeah,
exactly. But then because sometimes I was done earlier than the rest of my class, I would have like time to play. And it's not to take away from that. I really enjoyed that, like playing with clay and doing puzzles and stuff like that. But I wouldn't be as efficient or effective. And even by virtue of, for example, the grades that you have define kind of a career path that you have. It's very prevalent in the Netherlands. Sometimes I explain it and people think this is an odd kind of sense of education.
Yeah, for me, it was insane when I learned about it. Wow.
I've heard that as well, yeah. But even in high school, for example, I was really good at English because I learned that from a young age. And there was this program which they called Cambridge English, where some courses would be extra English, more advanced English. And I wanted to do that, yet I didn't have the other grades. For example, my Dutch wasn't as great. My math was still good, but some other grades weren't as good. So my average was below kind of that barrier of entry. So I could never do that.
Man.
If I were to have done that, then probably my path would have been different. Maybe I would have had a bit more of a British accent, for example. But I could never do that just because of my other kind of courses averaging up to below average in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In that sense, yeah, I recognize that maybe that's putting a boundary to really a lot of people that have a lot of potential way too early.
Yeah.
And if I look at myself, great value that I was bringing afterwards in the corporate world, right? Yeah. Those were not the skills I learned in aerospace engineering, by the way. I knew how to do the math, but I was leading teams. So basically, of course, it was fundamental to speak the technology, right? Mm-hmm. And to lead technology, one needs to understand technology. But the soft skills, even if I look at my university years, those were not really fostered during university. They were fostered because of my interaction with people, other projects that I was submitting myself to, right?
Yeah.
And of course, my experience with my siblings. I'm so grateful.
Yeah, I really get that.
Right?
Yeah,
it's like a very big school.
yeah, absolutely. It's especially since I have a few, I get that, those interactions.
Indeed.
One of the things I was thinking of was at some point you made this decision to do what you're doing now at a full-time basis. Yeah. But I always like learning from those experiences because I also envision myself at some point doing something and starting something of my own.
Let's celebrate that.
But I haven't done it yet. So
when
I have the opportunity of conversations like this, I really like to learn from that because at some point you took the plunge.
Yeah.
Can you talk to me and lead up to that point where you did take the plunge and any of the considerations there?
Yeah. Ooh. Thank you for that question. It's a plunge. I think it's really just, I being an entrepreneur, I love the description that my business coach called, she's Lauren Messiah, I absolutely love her.
Mm-hmm.
She gave this following image. Being an entrepreneur is it being in a darkness while you are trying to build your own flashlight.
Okay.
And you don't know where the way is, but you're building your flashlight in the dark in the hopes that you will find out. So that's how it feels.
Yeah.
It was scary. It was exciting at the same time, right? I'll be very honest. I think I avoided it for way too long,
mm-hmm.
right? I was already getting really great results with a woman I was working with during my free time, right? After work, I was working with women already and on the weekends. And everything in me was telling me that was the direction.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting much more excitement and energy from doing that work. And I was getting less and less excitement. And you
that's
know,
how it goes.
Yeah, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Until the point that I'm actually feeling drained. It's like my body is telling me, you are just not being authentic right now by staying in this place.
Yeah.
So I had to look, really be honest with myself and say, am I staying because my heart is in here and I believe that I'm really aligned
mm-hmm.
with what I'm built to do? Or am I staying out of fear? Out of fear because it's comfortable, right? I have a constant paycheck. I'm growing in the career. I continue being promoted. I actually left just before I was getting another promotion. So is it fear or is it out of love? It was out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And where is my love? My love is in this, is in working with people this way. So I said to myself, okay. Clear. When I grow old, I will always regret it if I don't do it.
Okay.
So let's have a conversation with my husband. Let's get a plan and just pull the plug. And I jumped.
Yeah.
Okay, scared. But I recognized that one of the most important things for me was to surround myself with people that had done it successfully and were doing it successfully. Because I think the most important thing for someone giving that jump is to give birth to the new version of themselves that needs to be there.
Mm.
Coming back to what you were saying, a previous version of myself, right?
Yeah.
I had to give birth of a new version of myself that was Franziska the entrepreneur, not Franziska the corporate, right?
Yeah.
And that version was born out of those interactions with my business coach, Lauren Messiah, with the Style Boss Academy group, and I have friendships of other entrepreneurs in styling that I speak to every week. We really support each other in that journey and was fundamental for me to give birth to myself, right? Mm-hmm. A new version of myself, yeah. But I don't know if I answered your question.
No, I think so. I'm interested in more so also the network part, because you already surrounded yourself. You said one of my kind of key metrics to success was to surround myself with people that are also doing it, to learn from them.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense. That's just the reason why I asked this question, is because I'm interested in that. And you want to learn from others to prevent as many mistakes, even though you can't prevent all of them.
You won't make mistakes.
Exactly. You will probably even make the same mistakes, but still. to learn from and to educate yourself. So that plunge is less of a plunge, even though it's still a plunge at the end.
Yeah.
How did you, like, because I also said I'm bad at networking. How do you network? How do you make those connections? Or what was even your first step into connecting with these people?
Yeah. I think if you use the word networking, we all are we're awful at networking. It's an awful word, let's be honest. Let's be honest, right? It puts a lot of pressure on human interaction, right? Mm. So I don't like to think about it as networking, although it is in the end. But I think about it as making acquaintances and getting to know people.
Okay.
So, and that's something that my, again, I learned from interacting with people. So I, one of my business coach actually gave me that feedback. It's interesting because you don't network, you get to know people. It's very, that's what I do. Mm. I have twofold energy, usually I say. I'm a very creative, nerdy person, you can imagine, where I'm behind the scenes cooking and creating. Yeah. And then when I get excited about something, I want to go into the world and teach or interact with people and get excited.
Yeah.
And I just make use of that excitement and curiosity for people. And I ask about them. And I'm very grateful that those interactions that I come into openly lead me to the things that I end up needing, right? Or or people come to me 1 or 2 years afterwards, hey, you're doing this now? Oh, I actually need in my company something for that. But those were interactions that I stepped into without any intention of doing business with sometimes. Well, it was about getting to know you. I'm genuinely interested in what you're doing. They actually sometimes, most of the times, also show interest, right? The other way around. It's a balanced interaction. And then I'm surprised many times because people come back sometimes. So I have the same as you were saying previously. I'm not that good at maintaining the network, right? I'm not going back to. But whenever I meet people, I'm genuinely interested and I give it my all.
Yeah.
So, I try to be authentic. That's the most important.
Good. Yeah. Investing in those relationships. I think that's the way I should look at it as well. It's just something about this online thing and then texting. Maybe it's just my dislike for texting in general is a hard one.
Yeah, yeah, I can relate. You cannot read people's faces
no,
in a text.
No, it's like, yeah, I miss so much context. I like conversations. I like calling people. I'm still a caller, even though that crew might be dying out sometimes. But yeah.
Oh, I hope it never does.
Please. Yeah.
Yeah.
But just to step back and to talk about the journey that you took and to play devil's advocate as well.
Yeah.
Things are going to go well, but things are also not going to go well. Is there any like downsides or any setbacks you can share?
Yeah, okay. I love that question. Yeah, the first thing was for me to be in a mindset of abundance instead of scarcity.
Okay.
And I think that's very important for anyone, especially for an entrepreneur, is I cannot predict. Right. When you're in the corporate world, you predict when your next paycheck is coming in. You know it every month. When you're an entrepreneur, there's a lot of fluctuation. There's seasonality, which you start predicting after a few years. You see how your seasonality is. There are a little bit slower times and a little bit more abundant times.
Yeah.
So just creating a mindset and fostering a mindset of abundance that you know it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Even if right now it's a little bit quiet and being okay in that space, feeling safe in that space is very important. And that was my first challenge. Thankfully, now I have my practice of abundance and I feel abundant. I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah.
But that was my first, in that sense, transformation into the skin of an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Was to be okay with uncertainty.
Mm.
From a financial point of view, so being in a state of abundance, I have enough right now. Why am I worried, right?
Yeah.
And knowing that it's always coming. Then the second thing was, again, connected to uncertainty.
Mm.
I don't have all the answers all the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm making a business decision without having all the information, without having the product completely ready, right? But that was a completely different shift from corporate. Whenever I was selling a product, I would sell it already ready. It's ready to take off the shelves. Now, I'm selling a proposition, and I just trust it fully because I know I have everything that it takes to build it and co-create it. And then just show up as my total best. And I know it's okay. It's going to happen. So also getting naked of the perfectionist, right?
Yeah.
That's also an old voice of mine. I know it's always there on the background, right?
Yeah.
Many of us have that little voice. So when the perfectionist steps in, I say, it's okay. You can sit down for a while. see how beautiful it is and how grateful I am for what it already is. It doesn't need to be perfect. It's already beautiful.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
It's a lot of mindset work.
I've heard the abundance versus scarcity, and it's more so because I listen to a lot of podcasts and a lot of comedians on podcasts, and they said, well, if you look back 20 years, 30 years, the comedy scene wasn't as great. So any gig, any opportunity that people would get, they would fight for that, right? This is mine. Yeah. And it would not be, you would not give it to anyone else because it's scarce.
Yeah, exactly.
But now they're in a space where there's plenty of opportunity, right? Whether it's on TV, whether it's online, whether it's in person, there's an abundance of opportunity. So people give it to each other. They're like, they would like their fellow network, their fellow relationships to also have what they have, or to have more than what they have, because exactly. There's enough to go around.
Exactly.
I think that's a really good mindset to have as well, within kind of your own space and your own entrepreneurial network.
I love that example you just gave. And it's really a good example because it shows that abundance creates abundance.
Yeah.
An abundant mindset creates abundance around you and for other people too.
Yeah.
So I also love my network because, for instance, this week I'm going to meet with one of my fellow stylists because I get a great opportunity. She doesn't fit properly my normal client. And I just thought immediately of her. It fits her client perfectly. If I was in a scarcity mindset, I would say, no, I will find the way. It's mine.
Yeah.
Right? And I would most likely end up working with a person that doesn't fit 100% what I usually do.
Yeah.
Both of us would not be fully satisfied. And I would be like, right? Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't be good for anyone. On the other hand, because I feel abundant, I'm in an abundance mindset. I'm saying, okay, this woman is perfect for this friend of mine.
Yeah.
Let's couple them together. This is for their highest good.
Yeah.
And in the end, for my highest good as well, because I'm opening space for the ones that are fully aligned.
Yeah, yeah. There was probably a learning in there as well, because at some point you were like, no, this needs to be a match, or you were trying to force it to be a match, but not everything can be a match. What were some of the cases also to learn from that it wasn't a match?
Ooh, good question. It came already from my corporate years, you know, because there were a lot of times where I was doing things because I was good at them, not because they were a match. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you feel it in your body when that's happening because you don't get excited about it and you get out of the activity with less energy than what you entered.
Mm.
And I remember that happening in specific projects that I did. And I said yes during my corporate years because I was in a scarcity mindset. I thought I have to please all of these people all the time because otherwise the shoe is going to drop.
Yeah, it's a have to.
Yeah, exactly. I have to. And nowadays, and that's not the case. I am my own authority. I'm a sovereign being. I can co-create my own reality. How beautiful that is.
Yeah.
Right? So I might as well make use of that.
Exactly. One of the final questions I had, just because you give so many shout outs to your business coach, how is it having a business coach? Because I've never had that. How was that relationship?
Oh, of course, it really depends on the person.
Yeah.
I am so grateful to have found my business coach. It was at precisely the point where I was feeling that I had to do the jump. So I usually feel that it was guided, you know?
Something, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, indeed. It was guided. And for me, it works amazingly well. It really depends on the energies of the people. You really need someone that is a good match.
Yeah.
And I always say, I also had not so good experiences in the past, not for business coaching, but for other things.
Okay.
And when that happened, it was because the person didn't go through it, right? And they are trying to teach something that they did not embody.
Okay.
So the most important thing is that someone who embodies what they preach, 1,000%. But in this particular case, I'm so grateful for Lauren. Shout out for Lauren out there if you're watching. Lauren Messiah. Because number one, she has an immense amount of experience and she did it, continues doing it successfully, right?
Mm-hmm.
She has the proof. And second thing, she reads energy and people like no other.
Okay.
So I arrive, usually our meetings go something like this. I arrive with a bunch of plans and dreams that I want to achieve, right?
Yeah.
And I want to meet these people and I want to do this and I'm excited about working with that person. And she helps me take a step back and see things from just for asking a few questions, right? And giving a few experience of her. Giving a more wider lens perspective that expands me. You know, I entered with this perspective, thinking excited because I was going to achieve this. And she just breaks that apart. And suddenly I'm excited because I can achieve this.
Yeah.
Wow, right? It's amazing. Without forcing it, I take the initiative and then she expands me. It's amazing. Just by asking questions and giving her own perspective and experience. And of course, everything needs to be felt in my own gut. I'm a very, I call it splenic person, a very embodied, like an animal a little bit. I feel everything in my gut.
Okay.
Very intuitive. So I only follow now. It wasn't always like that. But I always only follow. I had to learn.
Yeah, yeah.
I only follow what feels aligned and ready at the time that it feels. But usually I come out of those meetings like super excited, like a kid after Christmas, you know? Because, wow, I never thought I could do that. And now I believe I can do
that. I'm going to get it.
Yeah, I'm going to get it.
Yeah. Is she still your business coach?
Yeah, I'm so grateful
for
that.
That's fantastic.
She still is. And I believe she will continue for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it circles back to what we said before that. If you don't have any interactions with anyone, if you would have that with a screen, it would not be as empowering, enlightening, motivational as you're having it to be now.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
Absolutely.
I've loved this conversation,
Me
Francesca.
Too, Patrick.
This was a lot of fun.
Me too. Thank you so much for the invitation,
Thank
Patrick.
You as well. In kind of the topics we discussed as well as your journey, is there anything missing that you still would like to add on?
Just to round everything up. Remember that you have so much power, all of you, within you. And that it's all about believing, first of all, seeing it, recognizing it, believing in it, and then embodying it, showing it to the world. Because in the end, we are embodied human beings. I'm in front of you, thank you, right? We see each other, we smile. So what does that mean for you to embody your secret sauce every single day, right? What does that mean? Bring it out, believe it in yourself, and then just... have fun, like we were having in this conversation. Have fun.
Absolutely.
Life is way too serious.
That's a great point. Yeah, I love to laugh.
Me
and
too.
And I think it makes other people laugh.
1,000%. Yeah.
Good. Then I'm going to round it off here. Thank you so much for listening. I'm going to put all Francesca's socials in the description below. Reach out to her. Let her know you came from our episode. And with that being said, thank you for listening again. We'll see you in the next one.